Going to take a look at research and graduate students at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. And although we'll be talking about the UW-Madison, I think it applies to UW-Milwaukee or UW-Green Bay or any place else in the state where we have research going on at an institution of higher learning and where we have graduate students. They're critical to not only the operation and running of the university, but also to the special work that they do and how the findings that they come up with help you and help me. And here to talk with us about it today, Mike Bell, professor of rural sociology at the UW-Madison. He co-directs the program on agricultural technology studies. Mike, nice to have you with us.
It's wonderful to be here.
Jim Leary is a professor of folklore and Scandinavian studies, directs the folklore program. And Jim, good to have you back.
Glad to be here, Larry.
We haven't talked about this before. We've talked about folklore
things.
A lot of other stuff. Well, it's good to have you here today. And Bill Tracy, nice to have you with us, too. Bill is department chair and professor of agronomy at the UW-Madison. Good to see you.
Happy to be here.
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's talk first about graduate students' role and sort of the positive things that they play in our institutions. And, Mike, maybe I'll start with you and have you talk a little bit first.
Sure, yeah. I think it's really important to understand how great our graduate students are at the UW, at all the different campuses, and how great they are for the state. A lot of times we hear about our faculty, and sometimes we hear about the wonderful job I think we do teaching undergraduates, and the graduate students sometimes get lost, and I hope we can spend a little time shining a spotlight on them this morning. They are top-notch young professionals. And, you know, it's a wonderful thing that we get these wonderful young professionals, in a way, really cheaply for a few years, and to, in the process, bring their research skills and also their teaching skills to the state.
And, you know, when you come right down to it, Jim, I'll maybe turn to you next. They do a lot. They're sort of the workhorses for a lot of the research that actually gets done here that faculty members initiate.
Well, they do a tremendous amount of research. You know, here at UW, we have faculty governance, which means that faculty are not only teachers, but they're administrators. A lot of us write grants and funds. We do research and publications. But in order to accomplish all of that work, we have to work in teams of sorts, and graduate students are essential parts of those teams. And many of us are involved in a commitment to the old Wisconsin idea of the boundaries of the university or the boundaries of the state, and that's true certainly at other campuses as well. And graduate students are really active in working on projects that affect the state and working in different parts of the state.
And, you know, Bill Tracy, maybe you could give us an example of how a graduate student or graduate students function. Maybe you've got a specific example of some research that gets done and how they figure in.
Sure. Yeah, that's the great thing about grad students is that they're fundamental to our research. They largely do the research. And I have lots of different examples we can talk about. But one of the things I want to throw in here before we go into specific examples is the thing that graduate students really bring, in my opinion, to a place like UW-Madison is creativity. Mm-hmm. They have all sorts of new ideas, and they're not really bound by what's been done before. They're always asking new questions, and they're the ones that drive me ahead in my research. It's very easy to fall into a rut, but when you bring mm-hmm. in a new graduate student and they start asking, why do we do it this way? Simply saying, well, that's the way we've always done it, is not acceptable. So,
I think that's really true, Bill. I was just thinking, in a way, we're faculty for them, and they are faculty for us.
They push us along, for sure. But some of the examples, I have a number of students, but one of the big things we're doing in our program is looking at ways that we can reduce the use of pesticides. And I work with sweet corn, and Wisconsin's the number one, well, one of the top three sweet corn producing states in the country. And we're looking at ways we can reduce the amount of fungicide used, the amount of insecticide, and the amount of herbicides. All of that work, the hands-on work, the evaluation, And a lot of the experimental design where they're coming up with the questions, that's all done by graduate students. I have the general objective of reducing pesticide use, but the ideas are largely coming from the grad students.
And they push. I'm sure, Mike, you've got some examples too.
Well, I'm just reminded of the field day that we had at UW Research Farm this summer on organic research. First field day we'd ever had on the organic research going on at the UW. And Bill, I think you were there.
Yeah.
And I was really struck by how many of those presentations were being given by graduate students and how much the graduate students are actually pushing the faculty along.
Mm-hmm. And we've got Jim here, who's not who's in sort of a different field, not the.
Well, sure. People often think of outreach work as coming from sciences or social sciences, but there's a lot that also gets done in arts and humanities. Right now, I'm working with a couple of graduate students and with the Vesterheim Norwegian American Museum in Decorah, Iowa, and with our music library here, and we're creating a Norwegian American folk music archival project where we're, there are lots of old-time musicians out there who have little home recordings. They know about who performed and about the songs, and they have photographs, and we have some collections like that, but we're going to try to take this opportunity to go out and kind of sweep around and gather in more material. And then many of our graduate students are very technologically savvy. They know how to make films. They know how to take wonderful digital photographs. They know how to create websites, and we're working really hard to make a lot of this material accessible through websites that get tied into schools or local communities or people's homes that where you have photos and you have songs and tunes and people's voices and text and guides to collections. And so all of that is made possible by a lot of the really gritty and as Mike and Bill have said, creative work of graduate students.
Yeah.
Larry, in preparation for coming on the show, I sent around a little email to my colleagues to ask for some examples of some of the research that their students were involved in that was directly beneficial to the state. And my email box was flooded. Things like this, studying the causes and consequences of eviction in low-cost rental housing in Milwaukee, looking at the effects of globalization on Wisconsin manufacturers and their workers, studying the kinds of jobs that a bio-based economy might bring to Wisconsin, comparing the quality of, this is something a graduate student of mine is doing, comparing the quality of life for different systems of dairy farms in Wisconsin. Looking at how rural development might be able to reduce poverty in our state, learning how we can balance economic growth and environmental protection in high amenity areas in northern Wisconsin. It just goes on.
It goes on and on. Let me remind you, if you'd like to join in, I haven't given the number yet, so let me do that. If you'd like to join in with a question or comment, you're most welcome to do that. Here's the number to call. We're talking, of course, about graduate students and research at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Feel free to join in at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. If you're in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. And you guys certainly see the value of graduate students And just to a full disclosure here, I have a set of my own graduate students in the Department of Life Sciences Communication that I work with, too, and they mean a lot to me as well, so I have to let people know that. But there are some issues or some problems ahead in terms of funding for these graduate students, and Jim, maybe you want to comment on that.
Well, the cost of supporting a graduate student for departments has risen dramatically, particularly for those who do research and work on projects. It's remained more stable in terms of how we support them for teaching assistance. But for these projects that reach out into the state, our costs on the department level have risen rather dramatically, and as a result of that, it's become very difficult for us to afford graduate students or to attract them in the first place. And I know of a number of colleagues who used to be able to support graduate students by applying for federal grants or private foundation grants or one thing or another. But now, you know, they can no longer support the students on the funds that they would bring in, so they're not going for those funds, and as a result, everybody loses.
Yeah, Bill, you were going to add something.
Well, I was going to add that with the budget reductions we've had over the last few biennia, the cost of graduate students has gone up because of increased tuition costs, but the available funds to support them have gone down. So we've seen, and this is probably why we're here today, I've seen in my own department a number of faculty members who would have in the past, just as Jim just said, applied for a graduate student when they're applying for a grant, and they simply don't apply for the graduate student. Instead, they might hire a temporary worker, maybe, generally some kind of temporary worker who will do the labor, but any kind of intellectual curiosity or creativity is gone. And it's a very serious problem. And I've seen it again, I would say, a half a dozen times people have told me that they just simply aren't applying for graduate student funding anymore.
Plus, our ability to compete with other universities across the country for the best graduate students, including graduate students who come from Wisconsin, has become much, much reduced. Just let me give you an example. We have this thing, as you'll know, Larry, called university fellowships, which departments can apply for their very best students. My department, Rural Sociology, is in a graduate program jointly with the Sociology Department. Last year, we were able to put up 10 students for these university fellowships. These were our very best students. We got one of them.
Yeah.
Just simply because they got so much better offers from other institutions across the country. And that was a real loss for us.
Let's take some calls. If you'd like to join in, again, the number to call, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. And let's see what's on Barb's mind first in Madison. Barb, hi.
Hi, I'm in Madison, but I'm actually from Holman.
Okay. What can we do?
I'm calling to ask about any particular program you might have for testing beef to see if, you know, the omega-3s, you know, there's the big debate about the omega-6 and omega-3s and about beef having, if it's grass-fed or maybe something else, that, you know, maybe fed flax or something like that, that it has higher omega-3s and is more healthy for you.
You know, that's it's a kind of a specific question, but I think it's a good way to give us some examples maybe of work and research that is going on. Bill Tracy?
Well, it is a specific question, and we don't have the answer to that, although there are people on campus who are definitely studying that. That's a major focus in the animal science department, and it's important. But we, a little more generally, something that we are very interested in the College of Ag and Life Sciences is the area of grass based dairy as well as grass-based beef production. And there have been a number of studies in the college done on that. And again, those studies are largely driven by, and the work is done, the handling of the animals, the moving of the animals and things like that are largely done by grad students. But I don't have the specific answer to your question.
Barb, I just want to maybe chip in one example of a graduate student from a program that I'm involved in, something called the Agroecology Program. It's a master's program that looks very much at these environmental questions and some of the benefits that might come from it. And one of the issues that grass-based farmers sometimes face is that our summers get a little dry, and the grass doesn't grow as well. So some people are looking, some graduate student research is looking at how what we call warm season grasses can be brought into pastures to help grass-based farmers through that difficult time.
And I could just add on the kind of the arts humanities style, some of our graduate students are doing life histories or interviews with working farmers, perhaps some who are retired, that get a sense of their seasonal round of work. And a lot of the kind of locally based, informally learned techniques that they have used over the years.
So, I would also say one of my doctoral students, who I actually finished, did a similar study to what you're talking about. She interviewed farmers, women in agriculture.
Well, Jeannie.
And Jeannie Goering interviewed women in agriculture and sort of looking at their values and what they do and how they go about doing it. So I guess we don't have the specific research project, Barb, for you, but I know there are several, and our guests here can tell you there are several projects going on addressing that whole area. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Holly in Rice Lake, we'll get to you in just a minute, Holly. I want to remind everybody, our guest today, Mike Bell, professor of rural sociology, Jim Leary, professor of folklore and Scandinavian studies, and Bill Tracy, department chair and professor of agronomy at the UW-Madison. All these guys are from the UW-Madison. Talking today about the value of graduate student assistance and about research at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Martinez White, our on-air producer. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're taking a look at University of Wisconsin research and the role of graduate students in that research today with Mike Bell from Rural Sociology at UW-Madison, Bill Tracy with the agronomy department, Jim Leary with folklore and Scandinavian studies, so all with UW-Madison. If you have a question or a comment for us as we move along here, give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, it's 263-1890. And I forgot to mention, you can also email us and email us at talk@wpr.org. And let's turn to Holly now in Rice Lake. Hi, Holly. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Nice to talk to you. I actually have a question just for Jim specifically.
Okay.
It's not really a question. It's just a comment, I guess. My aunt is, she's a graduate. Well, she was quite a while ago. But she has her master's in folklore. She's a folklore historian.
Cool.
Yeah. She went to the University of Minnesota in Winona, actually.
By the way, Holly, there's another reason why it's appropriate for you to direct your question to Jim, because he's from Rice Lake.
Oh, really?
Yeah, true. My hometown.
Well, we have a lot in common then, don't we, Jim?
Sure.
Mom, I just wanted to say, when my aunt was a grad student, she did a really big research project with her professor on some of the local folklore in Minnesota. And I know they did a videotape and stuff, and I don't remember exactly what it was on, but I just wanted to say that she really worked hard on that, and that was kind of her idea, and it was really neat. So,
you know, and she's probably indicative of most of the graduate students we have, Jim Leary.
Well, a lot of folklorists, and certainly the ones that I work with as grad students, are very interested in what you call public folklore, and that is when you do your research, you know, you may publish articles in academic journals, but you're also going to gear yourself toward creating museum exhibits or public radio programs or films. And so I've worked, and grad students have worked with people who've done documentaries on Norwegian krumkaka baking through generations in certain families, or on polka music, or on...
Boy, I think I'm in the wrong field. I like your research.
Well, I believe in having fun while I do my work if I can.
Holly, thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call. And Sally in Blanchardville, I think you're next. Hi, Sally. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to make a comment about the grazing of warm season prairie grasses or grasses. And just would like to say that this year we opened up a portion of our CRP land, which is basically planted in warm season prairie grasses. This was because of the drought, and we were running out of normal pasture, and so we did that. And it's been very interesting watching how the beef cattle have not really kind of enjoyed it that well. Part of it, I think, was because we couldn't open it up until after August the 2nd, which basically then you've got a very mature plant or... So that might have something to do with it. Grazing it in the spring would be a totally different matter. But by the time August the 2nd came around, especially this year, this plant was looking very much like fall was very around the corner. But so the cattle have been on that portion of CRP, and they basically have been grazing the cool season grasses that are amongst the good stand of big blue stem and Indian grass that we have in that area. So I just wanted to make that comment to you.
Yeah, I think you've hit it right on the head. Is by the time they got into that warm season grass, it was pretty stemmy and pretty woody. And the cool season grasses that are growing in amongst them are just starting to take off now. And well, a month ago, and probably very succulent and rich. I visited Tall Grass Prairie in Kansas recently, and I expected to see something like our prairie at the Arboretum, but instead it was about 6 inches tall because those animals had kept it grazed the whole summer. So the big blue stem was about 6 inches tall. So I think you hit it right on the head.
And and graduate students, there's research going on this, as you mentioned earlier. Yes. And graduate students are how would a graduate student play a role in something like that?
Well, we look at all parts of the system, and the graduate students, animal science or dairy science graduate students would be working with the animals. They would be measuring intake. They'd be measuring weight gain. Our students in agronomy, they would be looking at the consumption of the crop, which species are being consumed more quickly. The question that Sally just asked, students may very well look at that, is what is the consumption of the cool season grasses versus the warm season grasses? They'd be going out to that field on a regular basis, harvesting the material, and looking at things like that. Hmm. And then ultimately food scientists or other animal scientists, as the previous caller, would be looking at the different effects on the animal products as a result. Does the cheese taste better? Hmm. Of grass-based versus more traditional dairy.
And as we look at these graduate students, I can think of just an example of a friend who graduated from the University of Wisconsin with a PhD, did his research here, started his own business, and I have to tell you, it was a business started here in Madison, or in Wisconsin, and sold it this last about a year ago for $174 million. So there's an economic benefit, I think, to having graduate students learning here and then applying what they've learned here in businesses and so forth.
That's a really dramatic example, but there are other examples that are equally dramatic. One of the reasons Madison is a high-tech center of the Midwest is because the reason is because of the research engine at UW-Madison and the graduate students who actually then end up employing, sometimes in the case of your friend, come up with the actual idea for the business. In other cases, they are the workforce for that new business or this high-tech segment of our economy right here in Madison. And it's
once they graduate,
significant.
Mm-hmm.
Once they graduate.
Yeah.
Sally, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And you can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890, 263-1890. Seems to me there are budget issues that are at both the federal and at the state level here as we look at this. I would like to – I don't know if you guys have the figures or not, but the amount of research, the extent to which research funds – the University of Wisconsin system itself, and we may or may not have that. I know that in the state legislature, our state support for university research and for the University of Wisconsin has gone from something like 40% down to 20%. But
unfortunately, in the last budget, it went below 20. I think we're at about 19% now. I'm actually looking for those numbers on research, Larry, but we do have a huge research engine here on campus, but I'm not finding those right now. So,
but it's probably double state support. I think it would be or close to it.
The state support for UW-Madison is roughly total in the neighborhood of $400 million, and the UW-Madison budget is over $2 billion.
And the money has to come from somewhere else.
Well, some of that is tuition money, a significant portion. But I have gifts, grants, and other funds, and that is over $400 million. And federal programs are $600 million.
So
over $600 million.
So $1 billion is coming essentially from research?
I would think that would be a safe number.
to run the system. So I'm not sure that the people, the average person, thinks too much about university faculty members as being entrepreneurs, but that's kind of how faculty have to be perceived.
That's fundamentally what we are. You know, I'm in the folklore program. It's not seen as, you know, like cancer research or something. There aren't millions of dollars of federal money out there, but there are small funds we can apply for, and sometimes we try to create products. We reissue old recordings of traditional mm-hmm. music, field recordings from the 30s, and sometimes we can get a little earned income, and then we try to plow that as match into grant money we can leverage, and we have to use that in some ways to maintain our equipment. We have a very tiny supplies budget, and so it's fundamentally what faculty do here. We are in many ways entrepreneurs in order to do research projects and in order to fund graduate students who in turn go out and do all of this work that has very powerful and sweeping public implications.
I just wanted
to emphasize that word leverage that you say you said there, Jim, because that money that comes from the state is a lever that we can then use to bring other money in. If you're going to get a big grant, you need to have done some kind of startup, some sort of preliminary thing, and that funding that we get from the state is really crucial for that.
Right. I did find those numbers here, Larry, and for the 2006-2007 budget at UW-Madison Academic Instruction, $442 million, and research, $880 million. So about double for research. Okay. But I also wanted to follow up on what this idea about entrepreneurship. What really goes on there is, it's both what Jim said and Mike said, is that we bring these programs together. And a very simple example is I had a student who was actually on some money that was federal money but comes through the college. This turned out to be an outstanding student, and I was able then to get a competitive fellowship to move that student off. But if we didn't have the state money to begin with, that student would never have even been on campus.
Yeah.
And so we bring them in, we use that almost as seed money, and then we try to blow that money up and try to find other ways to support the program and the students. And the other thing I wanted to bring up about grad students, and this same student has part in this story, is another role that students play, and I think very widely across campus, and it's hardly mentioned, is that they are often mentors of undergraduate students.
Yes.
In my program, I employ both graduate students and undergraduate students. And in many cases, the undergraduates really are mentored by the graduate student. They're taught the field techniques or the lab techniques, and becomes a very, very a teacher-student relationship. And but it's a one-on-one thing, which just wouldn't happen to our undergraduates without the graduate students here.
Yeah. Well, if I can add something on that, well, one of my colleagues sent me a note about the great job that one of her students, graduate students, does in teaching. And I won't mention his name, but this is what she wrote. Students speak of him with fondness, warmth, admiration, and respect. The student is a grad student is a role model and an inspiration to many undergraduates. He is the type of teacher about whom students will reminisce when they recall their college days.
Yeah. Very important role. Faye in Stillwater, Minnesota. We'll go to you next. Hi, Faye. Thanks for calling.
Hi. You know, I absolutely believe in everything that is being done. I have two sons that study work for the NIH, and one studies cancer, and so they're always writing for grants, looking for money, and graduate students. But the thing is, you know, the public gets a hold of negative publicity, and how can you, as professors and universities, better work to counteract the negative news that goes out there about federal dollars being spent on how cows eat, or square dancing in the heartland, or all of these things? How can you, you know, as universities, counteract the negative publicity that goes to where is our federal dollars going? I mean, they rather have our federal dollars go into the black hole of Iraq than square dancing in the heartland or feeding cattle, and how can this help? I mean, what is your responsibility to counteract that?
Well,
Bill Tracy, we'll go to you first.
Yeah. That's a major question that we are internally dealing with as faculty, because we realize that we have to do a better job. Now, we think we do a very good job on a one-on-one basis talking to citizens. I have a number of groups that I work with on an annual basis. But how to get this message further out? Well, one of the things we're doing today is trying to do that. But we really do have to remind people how we're affecting individuals throughout the state. And all three of us here have examples of that. But we really need to do a better job on that.
Yeah, Mike?
Yeah, I'd also add that I think we already do, I think, though, that we could do a better job. We do a better job than many other institutions. You know, this phrase, the Wisconsin idea, is tossed around, and it's something that I think our faculty genuinely believe in. I have many colleagues who like to go out and give talks in the community and who like to engage the public in many ways, even if they don't have what we call an extension appointment. It's something that I think people really believe in. I think, though, sometimes we get hampered because we're not politicians and we don't want to be politicians, but we do want to be educators and we do want to contribute our research.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's a tough line to walk.
Yeah, yeah. Jim, a comment from
well,
you, Jim Larry?
Well, this is something that I tend to face all the time because people can say folklore and they assume it's kind of trivial if they want to take one stance. On the other hand, some consider it valuable. But I guess I reflect on 1998 when Wisconsin celebrated 150 years of being a state, and what kinds of symbols, what kinds of traditions get called upon then? What shows what is unique to Wisconsin's identity that isn't found elsewhere? And it may be our dialect, which my colleague Joel Salmons is studying with the Wisconsin English Project. It may be polka music, which was adopted by the legislature, and I testify. it's the state dance, because we have a greater variety of polkas here than anywhere else in the world. People think of the Friday night fish fry, and you know, all those kinds of things. Somebody really needs to kind of study them and look at them and give them give some historical perspective on their depth and meaning and how they figure in the way of life that makes this place a unique place. So we're all vulnerable. People can say what we're doing is meaningless, or you know, it costs too much, or whatever. And if someone wants to make a negative statement about the university, you know, they can do it. You can always, what did Abraham Lincoln say? If you look for the bad in a person, you will surely find it.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, we're trying through, I think, our deeds and the students who we try to nurture to counter that every day.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's I guess the other way to look at it is what happens if we don't have that research, or if we don't have those grad students and we don't have that research going on. You can, I don't know how many hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of findings and so forth that we could point to just at the University of Wisconsin, let alone any other institution that has had an immeasurable impact on the...
Right. We haven't even talked about the medical sciences and the health sciences on this campus. Mm-hmm. And again, a great deal of the research is done by graduate students in those disciplines. So we're one small... The three of us here are one small slice of all of the impacts that are going out across the state. And I think we could easily come up with arguments, if we were given the opportunity, that would address the value of what we do.
Yeah. Mike, comment from you? No.
I think Bill said it well.
You were going to add one more thing there, Bill.
Well, I was going to be off topic, but I did want to follow up on one thing that we really haven't even addressed. It's been slightly addressed, and that's the teaching assistants. The teaching assistants allow us to reach far more students than we otherwise would. Mike read this nice testimonial here Larry, I think you know, but one of Larry's undergraduate advisees is my daughter. Mm-hmm. And my daughter is a student here in Life Sciences Communications, and she has just raved about the wonderful, especially one individual, but the wonderful TAs that she has worked with. And she actually has chosen courses based on whether she could get that same TA the next semester. So I don't want to leave the TAs out of the mix. We've talked about RAs, but TAs also play a tremendous role here.
And Jackie and Madison will give you a chance. Hi, Jackie.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
I'm a graduate student in the geography department here in Madison, and I just wanted to bring something up. You've talked about the contribution that grad students make in terms of their research and also in terms of, you know, staying in the community afterwards, but we have almost 10,000 grad students, if you include law students and other schools, and many of us bring our families here from other places. We really invest in the community, and we're just a big part of keeping the community vital as a whole in terms of the outreach work that we do in addition to our academic lives.
Good point. Anybody want to make comment on that, Jim?
Well, it's very true. I know a number of graduate students who in their private life, so to speak, one does volunteer news work for WORT Radio. Some of them are involved with nonprofit organizations. And so they are making these additional contributions. And as Mike said before, this is a university here that is not only one of the best in the country, but is certainly regarded as one of the best universities in the world. And because we have that stature now, we're able to attract not only the best people from our state, but from beyond, who make a contribution then to the state and the region and the nation and the world.
Sure.
Beyond.
Yeah, Mike?
I think that's very true. And the students from out of state bring a comparison to lives elsewhere that really enriches what we do. Mm. That's also true in the research that they do. We've talked a lot about the research that graduate students do that is specifically focused on Wisconsin. But, you know, even when graduate students are doing research that may be based in some other place, that comparison is so crucial in a global world that we must live in today.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you guys. What would you like? What would you like to leave? What would you like to leave with our listeners today in terms of support or what they can do to help out?
Well, I guess as our last caller, I think it was the previous caller. How do we get this message of the value of what the University of Wisconsin brings to the citizens of the state? And we, of course, all in this room believe there's a tremendous value. And I know many of the listeners do too. And we just want to get that message out and have those folks carry that message for us as well.
Thanks very much. Maybe take one more call. Beth in Richland Center. Beth, hi.
Good morning, Larry. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
First of all, I have to say this as a practically lifetime old fokey. Folklore is not optional. If everybody listening, think about how many times someone has referred to you or anyone you know as the folks. So folklore is about you. It's about knowing your own life and where you came from and what is fun and possible in the world. There, I got that off my chest.
Well said.
Now, regarding research, if we look at the big picture, gentlemen, I think we see that the world has shifted big time. The oil-supported gravy train that some of us, like me, grew up with in the 50s is over with. And getting back to folks, it appears to me that research, which is nothing other than people having self-knowledge and reflecting upon their actions and what they may do and gaining knowledge and, oh, please, some wisdom perhaps, so that we may proceed in our lives with felicity, otherwise known as happiness. And I'm personally offering whatever I have to give to you, and I will call you when I get back, starting with the folklore department, to as simply a concerned and avidly listening to Wisconsin Public Radio type citizen to do what I can to help make liaison between ordinary people and the research people, because most folks don't even have an idea what the term research really means. They think of something very removed and, quite frankly, I think even suspect, because what are you going to use that research on against me? What little animal have you done something unfortunate to? Or something like that. And no, research and the graduate students who are doing it and the professors who are trying mightily to bring this life into the world for all of us to enjoy together, it's about self-knowledge and it's about enrichment for everyone.
Well, Beth, I think that's a perfect place to end the show today.
I agree.
I thank you very much for that call. And Mike and Jim and Bill, thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Our pleasure.
They enjoyed it.
Mike Bell, professor of rural sociology at the UW-Madison and co-director of the program on agricultural technology studies. Jim Leary is a professor of folklore and Scandinavian studies. He's the director there and folklore program founder for the Center for the Study of Upper Midwest Cultures at UW-Madison. Bill Tracy chairs the Department of Agronomy, where he also serves as a professor. Some interesting insights from those guys today. And we're going to get some more insights on some other things relating to Wisconsin as well from Harriet Brown, editor-in-chief of Wisconsin Trails magazine. I think we're also joined on the phone by Todd Mishler, freelance sports writer, who has a piece in the latest issue of Wisconsin Trails magazine relating to the Milwaukee Braves, not the Milwaukee Brewers, but the Milwaukee Braves. That all coming up next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.